All right, we'll come to order. The Justice Appropriations Subcommittee, glad to see y'all. I missed the last meeting, so I appreciate everybody that worked hard when I was not here, but Rosa, will you call the roll today?
Chair Brennan.
Here.
Vice Chair Smith.
Here.
Ranking Member Valdez.
Present.
Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Bracy Davis.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Duggan. Fabricio.
Here.
Gottlieb. Jacques.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Stark. Waldron. A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rosa. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone back to the Justice Appropriations Subcommittee meeting this afternoon. Please ensure that your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off, as always placed on silent mode. I would also ask that anyone wanting to address or speak before the subcommittee today, if you're not on the agenda, please fill out an appearance card and provide it to us up here to staff, and they'll get it to us, and we'll call upon you. So good afternoon, members. Thank you for being here for this late afternoon meeting after we had a session today. I want to start the meeting by thanking our Vice Chair Smith for filling in for me last time and running our subcommittee meeting. I appreciate your willingness to help and to step in, and I've heard nothing but good things and about the great job you've done in helping lay out what our upcoming budget challenges may look like. I want to reiterate what we has been mentioned before about the state's overall budget picture and the long-range financial outlook adopted this fall. Although the outlook showed that the state's budget is obviously still in a very good positive standing, it also revealed that expenditures are beginning to outpace revenues. I would like to remind you to keep in mind when reviewing the agency request, remain mindful of the out-year impacts of our spending decisions as we begin to develop this year's budget recommendations for the next fiscal years. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone that we are only authorized to meet until 5 p.m. today. I would ask the members to hold their questions for that particular presentation until the conclusion of that presentation. Try to remain concise, and if you need additional information from an agency or a presenter, please follow up with them after the meeting so we can get through all of our presentations on time today. So with that context in mind, without further delay, let's move into our first presentation. We have presenting on behalf of the state court system, the interim state courts administrator, Mr. Eric McClure. Welcome, Mr. McClure, and you are recognized.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Brennan, Vice Chair Smith, and Ranking Member Valdez, and all the members of the subcommittee. My name is Eric McClure, and I am the interim state courts administrator within the Office of the State Courts Administrator. And thank you very much for the opportunity to present the state court system's legislative budget request for fiscal year 2024-25. The issues that the judicial branch proposes in its budget request are developed through a comprehensive process with participation throughout the court system, ultimate approval by the Supreme Court, and then submission to you. Two of the governance bodies that are very instrumental in presentation of budget issues for the court's consideration and development of those issues are our District Court of Appeal Budget Commission and our Trial Court Budget Commission. So I'm very pleased to have with me today in the audience Judge Clay Roberts from the First District Court of Appeal, who is the chair of the District Court of Appeal Budget Commission, Judge Mark Mahan from the Fourth Judicial Circuit, who's the vice chair of the Trial Court Budget Commission. And then I'm also joined by Circuit Court Judge Gary Wilkinson from the Fourth Judicial Circuit on behalf of the Conference of Circuit Court Judges of Florida, and Bradford County Court Judge Tatum Davis on behalf of the Conference of County Court Judges. Before I begin an overview of the budget request, I would just like to thank the subcommittee for its support last session and for all the years, and in fact, the entire House of Representatives. The manner in which you give due consideration to the issues and resource needs that the judicial branch brings forward in the midst of all of the other competing issues that you have to deal with is very much appreciated. So thank you for that support. I will start with the trial court issues. There are five issues within the trial court budget request, and these really are issues that are fundamental to the core mission of the trial courts, which is the delivery of due process and the adjudication of criminal and civil cases. So they go to the core essence of what trial courts do. The first issue is court reporting. Court reporters are instrumental in preserving the record of the spoken words in a court proceeding and ensuring that when necessary, there is an accurate transcript for matters that are appealed to the intermediate appellate courts. Without sufficient and available court reporting resources, there can be delays in court proceedings and therefore diminishing effects on due process. So we never want that to happen. And thanks to the legislature's support last year, you provided salary dollars for critical due process positions, including court reporters, which has helped with recruitment efforts. Those funds were effective July 1, and we're beginning to already see the fruits of that support. But having said that, there are additional challenges in the court reporting area, which is the basis for this budget request. There are two modalities for the delivery of court reporting services. One is the traditional stenographer, the keyboard striking that you see in courtrooms that produces coding that can then be used to transcribe the proceedings. And then there's also digital court reporting, which is an audio recording of the proceedings on a DVD or a server or a computer. And that enables one person to monitor multiple proceedings simultaneously and tag the proceedings in instrumental parts so that it can then be used by the judge for replay or production of a transcript. Right now, about 87% of our court reporting hours are in the area of digital court reporting. And there are statutes, rules, and policies of the branch that govern which modality is applicable for which type of case. For instance, in a capital case, the standard is to use a stenographer. About 75% of our FTE in court reporting are digital, however. But we are seeing increased court reporting hours, as well as increases in the number of transcript requests. Since fiscal year 19-20, we've seen about a 4.3% increase in court reporting hours, or 20,000 hours. Rates are also increasing for contract court reporters, and we use a mixed model in the court system. So this funding will support positions to enable us to have a mix of steno and digital positions, some contracted services, and then also some hardware and software for the court reporting equipment. The second issue is under the broad category of due process resources. And these are positions for three areas of vital due process delivery for the trial courts: interpreting services, expert witnesses, and senior judges. With respect to interpreting, Florida has the fourth largest population of limited English proficient individuals, and that is expected to grow proportionally with the population growth in Florida. This funding would support positions because we are seeing not only increased duration of interpreting events, but demand for interpreting in languages of lesser diffusion, which are languages that are less common and can require very specialized skills in interpreting. Regarding expert witnesses, depending upon the statutory framework or whether the expert witness is being offered for court assistance in a neutral fashion or is being offered in an advocacy position, that can affect who has to pay for the expert witness. But the court system is responsible for significant expert witness cost. These are in competency cases, incapacity, involuntary civil commitments, and other kinds of cases. And there are two phenomena that are occurring. We're seeing increased cost and rates for expert witnesses, and these are pass-through dollars. These, with one exception, are not court system employees. They're individuals that we procure their expert services, and then they invoice for those services. So we're seeing increased cost for those services and also the need for more experts with more evaluations. And then the third component of this due process issue is senior judge days. Senior judges have proved indispensable for spikes in court activities, such as the foreclosure crisis or the pandemic situation. They also help when there are vacancies or illnesses on a court. And the court system receives a general allocation of senior judge days each year in its budget. And then through the support of the legislature for a number of the last 3 years, there has been special non-recurring funding for pandemic-generated workload. And those funds have been used on a temporary basis to help with senior judge days. But those funds are coming to a close at the in June. And we are anticipating, for a number of reasons, including some vacancies and the fact that some of the pandemic-generated workload, the more complex cases, are still in the pipeline, that the demand for senior judge assistance will outpace the general appropriation that you provide. So this will give us additional senior judge days. The third issue in the trial court category is case support resources, and this is funding for additional case managers. As with senior judges, case managers have proved incredibly valuable in helping to ensure that both criminal and civil cases move through the system as efficiently and effectively as possible. They do everything from ensure that the documents are in order before a hearing occurs to helping track statistics on the pace at which cases are moving and their readiness for judicial action. We are seeing increased filings in certain areas of the court system, small claims, probate, and as with senior judges, are anticipating that case managers would help us forward the court's emphasis on the prompt adjudication of cases. The court has taken on a number of initiatives, most notably a special committee that looked at the resolution of civil cases and recommended comprehensive rule changes in the civil area that the court has referred to the bar for further explanation exploration to try and improve the efficiency in which civil cases are managed. So these resources would help support that effort. Then the next issue is complementary, it's case management technology. And the issue here is Florida has in its constitutional framework a shared responsibility for court funding, with the lion's share of it being state-funded, but counties being responsible for facilities and technology. And in the days when technology was easy to separate from other aspects of the operation of the court system, that worked well. But now technology is so inextricably linked to just basic court operations, including case management, that the challenges in deploying technology for case management, which is inherently a state responsibility under that constitutional framework, are growing. And we have circuits that simply don't have enough county support to reach a fundamental level of case management technology. We have case management systems in the state that adhere to standards developed by our Florida Courts Technology Commission. And we have circuits where they're not able to meet that standard or avail themselves of all the functionality under that standard. So a committee of the Judicial Management Council studied this issue and has recommended pursuing state support to bring those circuits to a foundational level of case management technology to support their adjudication of the cases. And that would include positions, hardware, software, and bandwidth to get those circuits to that level. It would not replace the county funding. That would be in addition, as a number of counties have been very generous in their support for the case management systems. Then the last issue in the trial court budget entity was brought to us by our partners at the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue, of course, runs the state's child support enforcement program, and they contract with the trial courts through the Office of the State Courts Administrator for child support enforcement hearing officers using their federal grant. And those child support enforcement officers are involved in the establishment, modification, and enforcement of certain child support actions. Two things are occurring here. The department had looked at trends currently in the filings and the need for child support enforcement hearing officers and also some projected growth, and had recommended 5 additional child support enforcement hearing officers and 5 administrative staff that support those officers. And then as a second component, the department is undergoing some strategic initiatives that they believe will expand enforcement opportunities for individuals who are benefiting from a child support arrangement, but that will also result in workload. And as they implement that strategic vision for child support enforcement, they asked us to consider filing this request with 5 additional child support enforcement hearing officers and 5 additional staff. So that brings the request to 20. And the department will have a complementary issue in their legislative budget request. For the appellate courts, there are 2 issues. The first relates to the 6th District Court of Appeal Courthouse. You created in 2022 a 6th District Court of Appeal. It became operational on January 1st of 23 with 9 judges and about 65 staff. They're currently leasing space at the Lakeland facility that prior was used by the 2nd District Court of Appeal, and they're also leasing space in Maitland. When the legislature created the 6th District Court of Appeal, you appropriated $50 million for a new courthouse. They are currently using a library at Florida Southern College to hold oral arguments or other suitable locations as they move throughout the district. The $50 million that you appropriated was vetoed. Last year in the governor's budget recommendations, there was $6 million to begin the study process for a courthouse. That funding was also vetoed at the end of session. The request here is for $8 million to begin site acquisition and architectural engineering work that would allow the court to come back to you with a cogent and detailed request for funding beyond that initial phase. The second request is for the Fifth District Court of Appeal, and this is to help them with some deterioration that they're having in their garage for the supports and the rafters, which has caused, they're in Daytona Beach, by saltwater deterioration. It's not at a crisis level right now, but the engineers who came in said that if it was not addressed, there would be additional deterioration. They are also having issues with their chiller. Their building was built in 1982 and then expanded in 2000. In 2017, they secured a new chiller, but the backup chiller is no longer capable of support, and the existing chiller is having regular repair issues. So this is a request to seek to replace that chiller. There is one issue in the Office of the State Courts Administrator, which actually is broader in terms of its service to the court system, and that is for a position within the Office of the Inspector General. Of course, the Inspector General is critical in ensuring that we have fiscal controls in place and that there are safeguards against fraud and abuse. That office has seen an expansion in its workload, in part just because of the growth of the trial court of the state court system budget, and also because of changes in technology, the greater use of data systems, or statutory requirements to ensure that they have the subject matter expertise to do audits against those kinds of data systems. There are requirements for cybersecurity audits as well, as the complexity of the state enterprise grows. And so this is one position to support the Office of the Inspector General. And then I don't have a slide on it, but there is one remaining issue, which is a salary issue for District Court of Appeal, Circuit Court, and County Court judges. And this is to ensure that we can attract and retain the most skilled professionals from the legal profession to serve on the bench. And the goal of this request would be to ensure that we are competitive nationally, as well as within the state, against a variety of metrics, federal judges and magistrates, the private sector, government attorneys. And although the legislature has been very supportive of judicial pay issues for the Supreme Court and for the appellate and trial courts over the years, currently our appellate judges have fallen to 11th nationally, and our circuit court judges have fallen to 23rd. And so the request is designed to get them into the top four nationally in the hopes of drawing that skilled set of attorneys to seek positions on the bench. And that concludes my presentation. Again, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here today and would be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McClure, for the presentation. Members, did we have any questions? I have only one on my list. Is it Chair Fabricio now? Chair Fabricio, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Sir, thank you so much for your presentation. I appreciate it. Had an opportunity to look at it. Just a couple of very quick questions. First, with regard to the trial courts, with regard to the case management technology, would this technology include the technology that's used at the clerk of courts for purposes of being able to look at dockets and cases in the dockets?
Recognize.
Thank you, Representative. It would address what we call the case management technology, which is what the judges use to view court records, to receive proposed orders, and to issue proposed orders with the parties. There is a difference, which is the case maintenance system that is maintained by the clerks of court, where people may go to look at docket information. But this focus is on the court's case management system.
Follow-up?
Quick follow-up.
So, but that's all fed from the same central database, I would imagine, because I would imagine that you're not keeping multiple databases of files for viewership, but with just different ratings. But the big question has to do really with, I believe that the federal system seems to work very well with a PACER system that's court-wide. And you're asking here for, it looks like, $12 million in general revenue, or $27 million overall, to bring up to speed this kind of really fractured system that some circuits have one technology, other circuits have another technology. Has the court system overall at the state level looked at moving to a PACER-type system court-wide, statewide?
Mr. Chair. Recognize.
Thank you, Representative. In answer to the first part of your question, it does interface with the clerk's case maintenance system. And so the data is either live against the production database of the clerks, or it's a replica database. So the judges are seeing effectively all the tables and information from the clerk system, and that interoperability between those and ability to talk to each other is critical. On the issue of a one statewide system, I referenced a technology work group that had studied this issue and brought forth this suggestion to the Trial Court Budget Commission. They looked at the issue of whether there should be one statewide system, and they ultimately recommended against that. They did recommend that each judicial circuit only have one system within the circuit. So, in other words, there shouldn't be multiple systems in the different counties within the circuit. But because these have systems, which we call the court application system, have developed over time, there are different models. You have some circuits that are using a homegrown model that was developed by court staff and that is deployed and managed with support at the Office of the State Courts Administrator. You have some that are homegrown, local to that circuit, and then you have some vendor models. And so the work group felt that to pivot from that after multiple years, this started back in the foreclosure experience, would not be their ultimate recommendation. But to your point about the importance of consistency among them, they do all have to adhere to certain standards and functionality that are prescribed by our Florida Courts Technology Commission. So while they may be unique in terms of their model, they should be able to provide the same level of functionality for the judges and other court system users.
Is that report reviewable?
Yes, sir, we can provide that to you.
Please do, thank you.
Thank you. I'll move on real quickly. We've got seven more presentations, members. Keep that in mind. I'll move to Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. McClure, thank you very much for your presentation. I have about two questions, maybe three. You mentioned something that was not on the slide, that you didn't create a slide, which was the salaries for the appellate and the circuit county judges. How much are you requesting?
The total request for that issue would be $47 million. And that, as I mentioned, would take the judges to fourth in the nation.
Follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McClure, for that response. Now, I like the way you presented this this sheet of page two, which is your overall budget request. The court reporting, the 60 FTEs that you're requesting, how difficult is it to find experienced court reporters?
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Quick answer.
Yes, sir. It's been very difficult in the stenography area in particular because that profession just seems to be fading. But the help from the legislature with additional resources for those due process positions, we believe, will be very helpful in increasing the recruitment capability. There's less challenges in the digital court reporting area.
Thank you. Follow-up, sir?
Last one.
Thank you. Let me see which one I want, because there were okay, so your general revenue non-recurring. Can you share with me what we are funding there in this non-recurring bucket of the different line items?
Well, there would be, if I may, Mr. Chair, there would be variation. For the trial courts, the non-recurring might be technology. For instance, in the court reporting area, I mentioned that there's and some enhancements to the digital court reporting equipment. So that would be one example. In the case management technology issue, there would be non-recurring also for certain equipment there. For the district courts of appeal, all of those issues are non-recurring because they're capital facility projects.
Okay, thank you. Real quickly, just one question for Representative Beltran, Representative Gottlieb, and we have got to move along. We'll start with Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for your presentation. You mentioned, I guess, in passing, the salary issue for the judges. You just give us, for the benefit of the committee, just let us know where the salaries, because we've raised them a number of times. Let us know where they are and where you think they need to be, just so we can get a benchmark of what y'all are looking for, please.
If I may, Mr. Chair. The current salary for District Court of Appeal judges is $212,562. For a circuit court judge, it's $191,163. And for a county court judge, it's $180,616. That's as of July 1 in the current Appropriations Act. And the requested salaries are... apologize. It would take DCA judges to 231,000, circuit court judges to 223,300, and county court judges to 210,980.
Thank you. Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. So the questions I was going to ask about the judges have already been asked and answered. I do agree that the public defender, state attorneys, probably are all 10 to 15% lower than they should be getting in terms of salaries. But my question to you would be, other than just taking from general revenue, where are we having shortfalls? Are we having shortfalls in trust funds? Because it was stated that the spending is outpacing revenue. What can I know in my county, if a transcript has been filed in the clerk of courts, it's essentially downloadable for free. So I don't know who, if anybody, could profit from that. And I've also said that civil filing fees should be raised. I don't know if that comes within your purview, but what can we be doing to generate more money and not disenfranchise people from having access to courts?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'd certainly defer to the committee and the branch as the policymakers to decide on how to generate that revenue. I can tell you that the court system is funded through a mix of revenue. We have general revenue, and then we have the state court's revenue trust fund, which is liquidated in part with filing fees that are not retained by the clerks. And we are funded through a mix of that, and it's vacillated over the years. It's sometimes been 80% trust funded and 20% GR, and it has reversed. The trust fund, what we just watch for, is to ensure that any appropriations and authority that you provide is supported by fees, and we're constantly vigilant to make sure that we work with your staff if we're seeing that the authority and appropriations that are against the trust fund are causing us to have concerns that it won't be supported with fees, because then we're in a posture of having to pursue loans and things like that from the governor's office.
Thank you. We're going to have to move. And I've got two questions. I'm not going to ask mine either. So we appreciate, I'm sorry that we are under these time constraints, but we appreciate your presentation, and thank you for making the trip up here to see us.
Thank you, members, and I appreciate your time.
Next is on behalf of the Department of Legal Affairs, the Office of the Attorney General, is the Chief Deputy Attorney General, John Gard. Welcome, sir.
There we go. Okay. I appreciate any help.
If it makes it go faster.
Yeah, if it makes it go faster. Yeah.
And I say that in GS. Y'all know what I mean.
Hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair and Ranking Member and Representatives. It's great to be in front of this subcommittee about the Office of Attorney General and Department of Legal Affairs 2024-2025 legislative budget request. I want to thank you for your consideration and your past consideration on behalf of the Attorney General. I know she appreciates it and appreciates everything that you all are doing up here. In the 2023-2024 approved budget, the legislature approved the Department of Legal Affairs approximately $373.91 million. Of that sum, almost 76% of that is from trust funds. Only $91.1 million is general revenue. The Office of Attorney General has approximately 1,147 full-time equivalent positions, and the Department of Legal Affairs represents the state, its agencies in court, both offensively and defensively, both in civil and criminal matters. And one example that you may have heard of recently of litigation that we filed on behalf of the state is the Attorney General filed a suit recently against Meta for causing harm to Florida's children. But in addition to big matters like that, we represent the state and its agencies in thousands of cases, big and small, again, criminal and civil, including handling all the criminal appeals for the state. In addition, we have the Office of Statewide Prosecution, which prosecutes certain multi-circuit crimes, and that currently has about 94.5 full-time equivalent positions. We have 11 budget issues in our LBR this year, but to try to save some time. I'm happy to meet with anyone to discuss any particular issue, but I'm going to focus on four of the issues today. And again, I'm happy to meet with anyone or staff to discuss the rest of the issues. The top priority for the Attorney General remains recruiting and retaining top legal talent. Several years ago, we had an increasing vacancy rate, especially among attorneys, that threatened to balloon because of retirements that were upcoming. The legislature has provided additional resources the last couple years, and we've been able to stabilize our vacancy rate. And we want to thank you all for that consideration and those resources. We are seeking an additional about $2.7 million this year to drive our vacancy rate down, which for attorneys is almost 24%. And to do that, it's a 5% raise for attorneys across the board. That raise should make us competitive with other government attorneys. We're not seeking to become competitive with private attorneys. We're looking at government attorneys, specifically city and county attorneys who do very similar jobs to our to many of our attorneys, and also assistant United States attorneys who the U.S. attorneys frequently steal our people for or from. And so that $2.7 million, which is about $1.8 million in rate, and it's only $1.6 million in GR, should help us be competitive and drive that vacancy rate down. Our second issue I wanted to highlight for you is dealing with our Office of Statewide Prosecution. In the last several years, Statewide has tackled a number of evolving and new criminal threats that have arisen, including organized retail theft, human trafficking, and cyber fraud. We are seeking to expand Statewide to deal with these threats, to deal with unmet cases. We are seeking 30 prosecutors and 10 staff. In total, we are reclassifying or proposing to reclassify and reassign 11 current personnel from long-term or positions from long-term vacancies, and are seeking only 29 positions, and the total amount is $3.5 million in rate and $5.8 million in general revenue. The third issue I wanted to highlight for you is our IT modernization project. Actually, under General Bondi, the office began this project, and over the last several years, we have been able to modernize part of our IT system, our legacy IT systems, and the contract we were working under expired last year, and we would like to complete the modernization of our of several processes, including our case management system, and we are seeking $7.1 million to finish the project. The out-year money, since the chair mentioned out-years, is really because the likely programs we're going to use have cloud recurring dollars that require for the program to work. And finally, I wanted to highlight one of our opioid-related initiatives that are included in our LBR. Last year, you all were so generous to fund drug take-back at $1.45 million for drug take-back kiosks, mainly for rural, inner-city, underserved areas, including independent pharmacies and hospitals. That procurement is now out. It's due on Thursday. The responses are due on Thursday, and we're seeking an additional $1 million, which last year I think we originally sought $2.45 million for the project, so we're just looking to finish the project with an additional $1 million. And those are the four issues I thought I wanted to highlight with you, given the limited amount of time that the constraints that you guys were under. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Okay. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Next up is our State Attorneys and Florida Prosecuting Attorneys Association, represented today by the Second Judicial Circuit State Attorney, Mr. Jack Campbell. Welcome.
Afternoon, Mr. Speaker, Committee Chair and members, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm actually going to try to catch y'all up on time. I didn't do a PowerPoint this year. I'm here to actually tell you you're doing a good job. That's often maybe not what you're used to being hearing, but The fact of the matter is what you all have done over the last few years has made a demonstrative difference in the way we are. To give you an idea, in 21-22, we were looking at a 25% turnover rate. This year, we only had a 20%. Now, in any other endeavor of business, a 20% turnover rate is, of course, scary, and I would suggest present some real economies and losses of opportunity. We are, as a result, we were able to drop our deficit down from having a deficit last year of 382 prosecutors. We dropped it down to 311. And unfortunately, though, as Florida continues to grow, we had total cases grow up to from 894,000 to 949, which means the caseloads per ASA have gone from 550 to 583 per ASA. So it's what you all are hearing. I think you're going to hear, and you've already heard from the courts. We continue to grow as a state. We continue to have more crime, unfortunately. You're seeing us focus. I was the one who was warning you a few years ago about the terrible backlog of cases dealing with the pandemic. We have seen that ebb and drop off. We, because of y'all's wisdom and giving us a little bit more parity, we've been able to fill in. We are still critically having a 20% turnover rate. So I'm constantly, as I tell people, I'm not running a law office, I'm running a law school. And so when you have a major crime, which a lot of these murders that occurred during the pandemic are now coming ripe. Just as your judges need some experience, you need some experienced prosecutors and trial attorneys who are ready to try those cases as we get more serious. You all have made some initiatives that are great. Honestly, we've been focusing quite clearly on the consolidation issue, and that is a major issue to all of us. But what you all have done over the last several years, you all have listened to us. You have been very wise in your financial planning, and I want to say thank you for doing it and to tell you to keep up the good work. Our look at the inflation rate for this year is 6.3%. I hope that you all, we've been lucky enough to see a 6% across the board. We're somewhere across the board COLA increase for our state workers. Just recognize if you don't act, we're going to take a 6% haircut just because of inflation. And I would suggest that increase, you're going to start seeing more vacancies as we lose, as was said by Mr. Guard. The U.S. Attorney's Office is stealing one of my people right now. We're losing them as county attorneys. They can just simply make more money with less stressful jobs. So with that, once again, I'll try to get you back on track with time and open myself up to any curveballs you want to throw at me.
Any questions for the state attorney? Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. Can you just describe where we're at in terms of case counts? You know, we're saying we need more money, which I appreciate, but where are we in terms of case counts this year compared to prior?
Yes, sir. So the average case count in 2021 was five. I'm sorry, I should have asked. Can I speak to him?
Thank you.
In 2021, it was 539. In 21-22, it's 552. And this year, it's 583. So it's an 8% increase. So it's actually, despite the fact that we're holding on to it, because of we had a 9% referrals, so law enforcement gave us 9% more cases, even though we are holding on to prosecutors a little bit longer, we're actually losing ground with the caseloads getting greater. Thank you for asking the question.
I see none. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your family service.
Thank you very
criminal
much.
Criminal justice system. Next, we'll have the public defenders and the Florida Public Defenders Association, represented by the public defender from the 8th Judicial Circuit. Stacy Scott, welcome.
Thank you. I can work the technology. There we go. Perfect. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Stacy Scott. I'm the public defender for the 8th Judicial Circuit, and I'm here representing the Florida Public Defenders Association. Like the other presenters, I'd like to start with thanking you for the help that you've given to our offices and to our employees over the last couple of years. The increases for assistant public defenders have made a real difference in the turnover that we've been experiencing in the last few years. With that, I will go to the first slide. So our turnover rate after the pandemic was as high as 27% per year for our assistant public defenders. And through the help that you all have given us with salary increases, That has dropped down to about 23% in the last fiscal year. So the salary increases are making a difference to our critical issue, which is losing our assistant public defenders. Probably the greatest inefficiency that we have in the public defender system and in our criminal justice system is turnover. Every time we lose an attorney, we have to retrain a brand new attorney. First of all, try to find a new attorney to hire, which has been a real challenge. The number of applications coming into public defenders' offices across the state has been down. The number of people accepting offers for assistant public defender positions has been down. And every time we lose an experienced attorney, we have to reassign those cases, give them to an existing attorney position who then has a greater caseload, and it causes the cases to backlog and slow down, which affects all aspects of our criminal justice system. So that is why the number one priority of the public defenders this year is a salary increase for assistant public defenders. The average starting salary for assistant public defenders statewide is about $64,000 right now. We're asking for an approximate 15% increase, as Rep. Gottlieb had mentioned, to bring our attorneys up to $75,000 as a starting salary, which we feel is a very good salary for someone who's coming out of 7 years of higher education and a professional. We can attract and retain more attorneys at $75,000 than we can at the current $64,000. So the total request is about $10.9 million in general revenue, and that includes estimated benefits for the attorneys. So it's not a huge ask, but it's a very in relative to the entire state budget, but it's a critically important ask for the public defenders statewide. We have a couple of other issues that I'll get with Mr. Keith about and with all of you individually in terms of rate increases. About 12 of the circuits have asked for rate increases, which is important to them to be able to raise salaries with monies that they have existing in their trust funds to be able to utilize that money. And we're also hoping for an inflation adjustment for all staff, as Mr. Campbell referred to. When inflation goes up and salaries don't go up and the cost of living, is just so expensive for our employees, and they're actually losing money and falling behind in the private sector and in life in general. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Any questions? Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question to you is, first of all, thank you for your presentation. Mm-hmm. My question is, what is your inflation percentage ask?
Our ask is for 6.5%, which is we thought was a reasonable based on the projections for inflation in the state of Florida.
Thank you.
Representative Campbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. The question I have is regarding retaining those attorneys. Mm-hmm. Where have you found to help with retaining attorneys? Have you guys had to switch up some of your game plan of how do you keep them in at the positions?
Recognize.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The main thing that keeps our attorneys is salary increases and the hope for being able to make a good living and to be able to stay in the work that they love doing. We have so many of our assistant public defenders that come to us as the electeds and say, I love this work, I have a passion for this work, but I can't afford to do this work. So the number one thing would be salary increases. Unfortunately, we're not able to offer a lot of the benefits of like at-home work and things of that nature that some private sector firms are able to offer, because criminal justice is an in-person business. You know, we staff courtrooms every single day of the year, first appearances and huge dockets, and we go see our clients in jails and other detention facilities. So we have to have our attorneys present to serve our clients and to serve the public and to be available to be in the courthouses. So that's why we've been focusing on salaries as our number one issue.
Good. Well, thank you.
Okay,
I appreciate
thank you,
you,
Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee.
And I appreciate your family service and government, too. Like Mr. Campbell. Next, we'll have the Justice Administrative Commission, represented by their executive director, Rip Colvin. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. It's a pleasure to be here to present on behalf of the JAC. I'm Rip Colvin, the executive director. I am very, very appreciative of the support that the committee has given the JAC over the last several years, especially during the uncertainty of COVID with the use of our due process, revert and reappropriate. We have one issue that we're asking for this year, which is the project establishment of a project management professional at JAC. Most of our projects and issues that we have that we push are IT related, so this would have an IT slant related to it. We're asking to fill an existing vacant position. We're asking for additional salary rate of $69,000. The total ask is $150,000 in total GR. That's GR in both recurring and non-recurring. And our total ask is very small in terms of the percentage of our budget. We will have an amended LBR issue potentially coming up related to implementation of Florida Palm and our support of our 49 judicial-related offices to make sure that the integration of our systems comes off without a hitch. And that concludes my presentation. Happy to take questions, Mr. Chair.
Members? Don't be scared. Y'all saw his name is Rip. That's a scary name.
It's popular in Halloween.
Very popular. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. We're now on to the Criminal Conflict and Civil Regional Councils. Represented by Ms. Candace Brower. Welcome.
That. All right. Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members, for having me here. And thank you also, as the other presenters thanked you, not just for the raises, for everything you've done for the criminal justice and for families throughout Florida, but also for recognizing our agency and including our agency in those increases. Because as you all, most of you know, our attorneys do perform the same functions as most similarly to public defenders for doing the same work. Certainly, we appreciate being treated similarly. So I just like to let everybody know, since our name is not as familiar as the public defenders, we do the same work as the public defenders, including death penalty and death penalty resentencing cases. But our office also gets appointed to all of these civil cases. We're the first line of defense in civil cases, so we're a hybrid agency, criminal defense and civil. Anytime you are entitled to an attorney in any one of these cases, our office will be appointed. So those are equally important to us. But our office was created to save the state money, and as as everybody knows, that is also very important to us. We have saved, as of last year, $419 million to the taxpayers. And if you adjust that for today's numbers, that's about $675 million in today's adjusted for inflation. So we really just want to be able to continue to do the great work that we were created to do. But to show you what type of cases we handle, certainly most of our cases are criminal cases. About 75% of them are criminal cases. But 25% are mostly those dependency cases. So to give you an idea, that's basically all the cases that the guardian ad litem would handle. We handle those as well. I personally am board certified in juvenile law, so it's a very important area of the law to me. It's where we reunite families. It's where we help children. And it's just as important to us as all the criminal cases we handle. So this year, really, the most important thing, as it is every year for our attorneys, is basically to be treated equally as they could if they were to go work, do the same or similar jobs at the state attorneys or the public defenders. Right now, our minimum pay is right around $40,000. It hasn't changed when the rate increases were given for the minimum pay for the state attorneys and public defenders are stayed at $40,000. We did not ask for a rate increase because we were given raises, and we certainly We're able to use that money to pay more, but we don't hire any attorneys at less than about what the minimum pay is right now at the public defenders, which is about $63,000. So we're just asking that the most important thing for us right now is just our rate to be increased to be equal with what they could make at the public defender's office at $63,000. Without that rate increase, and it's not necessarily dollars, we're going to have minimal compression issues since we don't pay anybody below that. If we were to get new positions, which we also desperately need, they would be calculated at a rate of $40,000, which we couldn't pay, and we'll run into shortfalls eventually. So we really hope that that is addressed. And to also show the comparison, right now it's about a $21,000 difference between minimum what you could make at the state attorneys and public defenders compared to what you could make at our agency, and that is including retirement. One huge difference from the state attorneys and public defenders to the regional councils is that the minute you walk in the door working as an attorney at the state attorneys or public defenders, you are earning senior management service retirement. We have never asked for that for all of our attorneys, but we certainly think that it is deserved for those attorneys that have worked for a long time earning the level of supervisor to get that senior management service retirement and at least make what they would be making as an entry-level public defender. So that is a very important thing, just to get us closer to parity. So basically, that is what we're asking. Just include the regional councils, as you have been doing in the last couple of years, with any pay adjustments. Cost of living increases are so important with inflation. Just as Ms. Scott said, this is just something that we're just trying to keep up with. We're all just trying to keep up. And we so much appreciate that being remembered. And so basically, I'd just like to remind everybody that we are just not about criminal justice, but also about reuniting families. And these are actual clients who gave us permission to use their pictures, because that is a sort of a happy side of what we do. And we certainly want to continue to do it and save the state money.
Members, Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for your presentation this afternoon. So I guess my question is more so, the Public Defender's Office has just asked for an increase of $75,000. And this might not necessarily be a question, but more so for the committee. I'm hoping that we can... Attorneys are attorneys, right? So I feel a certain kind of a sense of inequity. I feel a sense of inequities when you have a public defender maybe making a little bit more money for the same job that they're doing in your silo as well, and you have different types of cases that you take as well. So I'm wondering, why not try and get an increase to closer to what the public defender's office is asking for, so then there's more parity and equity alongside the entry level positions for attorneys.
Thank you, Representative, so much for that question, and ditto everything you just said. Absolutely, we have always been playing catch up. And recently, we've at least started being included in the raises, but until we get those minimum salaries across the board all the same, we'll always be sort of playing that catch-up. But yes, thank you so much for recognizing that. Absolutely, 100% agree.
I'll be looking forward to talking with you, Mr. Chair, to see if we can bring some increases more so to bring them a little bit more into that parity state. Thank you.
I welcome that. Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And not even a question. I just want to echo the sentiments of Ranking Member Valdez. One of my questions was going to be, what is the starting salary? And when I shuddered when I saw the 40K. I practiced in the area. I think I mentioned this to you last year when you gave the presentation of dependency. And when I started as a DCF attorney, it was 39K, and this was 20 years ago. So that makes me really nervous that 40K is a start, and especially the inequity with the other group. So I would hope that we address this as well. And I guess I can talk with the state attorneys afterwards, but I don't know that I heard what the starting salary was for the state attorney, so I'd love to hear that. Perhaps not right now, but I'd love to hear that afterwards.
Throw it out there.
$61,000.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else? Thank you, Ms. Brower.
Thank you, sir.
We now move to the statewide guardian ad litem. We have our executive director, Mr. Dennis Moore. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dennis Moore. I'm the Executive Director of the Statewide Guardian Ad Litem Office, and I appreciate the opportunity to address to you and the committee today on the budget needs for the folks that represent these children throughout the state. So the Statewide Guardian Ad Litem Office and a guardian ad litem is required by federal and state law to represent the interest of every child in abuse and neglect proceedings. We do that with a team of volunteers, a caseworker, and an attorney. Our attorneys and our volunteers and our caseworkers do a wonderful job throughout the state. They impact these children's lives every day, all the way down to permanency. Our most recent review and research has indicated that when a guardian ad litem is on the case, that children move to permanency quicker. And I'd be happy to share that with any of the committee members at any time if you'd like to meet separately on that. So moving into our specific issues this year, we're very proud of expanding our notion of what volunteerism is. And so instead of just having volunteers that just represent children in these cases, what we've done is we put together a youth group, and that youth group has told us a variety of things that they like to see us do, and one of those was stay on the case after we age out and we become adults. And so find someone to stay with us, because a lot of them don't have anyone. And so we started a mentor program, and we've partnered with a lot of folks. We partnered with the Florida Bar, for example. We're very proud to now be in the First Ladies Hope Florida initiative. And so we provide those mentors that then are going to hook these kids, these young people up with the services they need after they age out. So we have nothing for that currently at the Guardian Ad Litem Office, and it's approximately 900 kids a year that are aging out of the foster care system. Approximately what we're seeing over the last month and a half of doing this is about half of them are looking for that person to stay with them. You know, we're not trying to get in the full-blown business of that, but we need two FTE, one to monitor the data which is being collected and that we need to report on, and number two, to coordinate those efforts when we get phone calls and so forth to hook those folks up with the services they need. Issue number two is a realignment of existing funding that we have. Currently, our network is housed at the Northwest Regional Data Center through a system of servers. We want to move to the cloud. That's going to take a specific category. $360,000 a year is approximately what that costs. Moving to the cloud probably net a savings about $57,000, and we just ask to move that money from the specific category into our operation category for that one, so that we can start on the cloud environment. The third issue is attorney recruitment and retention, and so the Statewide Guardian Ad Litem Office has received additional funding for compression issues, and we're very grateful for that. And we've worked very hard within existing resources, but we've gone from approximately 70% of representing all of the 34,000 kids that are in care annually to over 93% at this point. So our folks are stretched pretty far on that. And our attorneys were not included in the specific pay raises for last session. And so the way we try to compare ourselves is to the Department of Children and Families. That appears to be the labor pool that we're competing with mostly. And so when we look at that, we go to a certain level, 60, and then they go to 65. They've gone to 69. Now they're asking for over 70. And so we're just asking for a $5,000 increase to compete with the Department of Children and Families, not to overtake them, just to remain competitive, and that's approximately a $1.2 million issue, but it's only $942,000 in revenue, another $302,000 in grants and donations trust fund, which we would then ask for the federal government for 4E money to cover. Our next issue is our case coordinators. So last year, our caseworkers were more of our problem in terms of turnover and vacancy. And so the workforce stabilization, which we engaged in, and the funds that were provided for compression, we've used to raise those salaries to be competitive. But again, the Department of Children and Families and then the CPIs, the Child Protective Investigators, that are now moving up over $50,000. And so our folks at around 41 they're not going to be competitive for long in our view. So back when the Guardian Ad Litem Office created their certification program in 2016, they had requested an additional $2,500 when the case coordinators finished their certification program, similar to what the CPIs get over Department of Children and Families when they finish their certification program. The certifications are very similar. Florida Certification Board runs it, and it's very intensive, labor-intensive, rigorous course of study. So we're just asking for $1,500 per caseworker, and that's approximately a $667,000 issue to get us to stay competitive with the Department of Children and Families caseworkers. Our last issue is a result of a cut in federal funding to the Victims of Crime Advocates funds that are provided to the state of Florida. And I know there's several entities that draw down from this. We draw down from this for our caseworkers. Our caseworkers are considered victim advocates by the VOCA folks. And so we had approximately 18 of those positions that we feel are going to be cut. We don't know the exact amount right now, but that is what we're looking at, based upon the fact that the federal government is cutting about a third of that program. So we're looking at a third this year of those positions going, which roughly translates to 18 positions for us, and that's a $1.2 million issue. Again, with the high caseloads and pushing out on higher representation, we're going to look realistically at what we need and ask for that, but that's what we think is going to be is going to affect our office with that current cut. Again, we're representing almost 94% of these kids. We're within 1,000 of representing every one of them for the first time. And we think that our folks do a marvelous job of representing these kids, both their legal interest as well as their interest out in the community every day. Be happy to talk with all of you about that, but I can take a look around and know a lot of you know it already. But, Mr. Chairman, that's all we got, and so I'll take any questions.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Executive Director Moore? You're it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Moore, for your presentation. On your slide 4, where you discuss on issue 1, you state that you require two new positions, but there's not a budget, a dollar amount. So what would that dollar amount be for that issue and all of the other issues collectively?
Right.
Mr. Recognize.
The total amount for that issue in the two positions is $128,460. And the total budget ask for all five is $2,937,316. That would be if you subtract the $57,313 savings on the transfer of the funds for the movement to the cloud.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Any other questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much,
y'all,
Mr. Chair.
We appreciate y'all. Next, we have the Capital Collateral Regional Councils, represented today by Suzanne Keffer from the Southern Region of the Capital Collateral Regional Councils. Welcome.
Thank you. Let me see if I can figure out the...
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Brannon. I am Suzanne Keffer from CCRC South. I represent all of the regions of CCRC today. The North region, I'm joined by Rob Friedman in the audience, and the Middle region, I'm joined by Eric Pinkard. Just a very quick description of what the CCRCs do. We represent indigent death row inmates in their capital post-conviction proceedings until we get relief or their sentence is carried out. We receive our cases from the Florida Supreme Court. We're appointed once the court affirms their conviction and sentence on direct appeal. I also want to echo my criminal justice agency counterpoints in thanking all of the members today for the work that was done last session, for providing raises for not just attorneys, but similar positions that are difficult to recruit and retain. We certainly greatly appreciated that money. I will also echo what my counterpart said in that while it did help us make strides, particularly in retention and recruitment to some extent, that those issues continue to be a matter for us. And as the conflict counsel mentioned, CCRCs would like to continue to be considered in those conversations with respect to cost of living increases or pay adjustments for employees and particularly attorneys. That being said, our request this year is on the modest side. We're requesting a little less than $50,000 across the offices, and that's in particular for a rental increase, additional equipment for a copier that's on its last leg, and it's very expensive to replace the parts if they even do exist. Also for information technology, similar to what I heard from Guardian Ad Litem, the South is looking to go to a cloud-based storage and email system to help our collaboration between attorneys, outside resources, and our investigators. And then again, additional equipment in the amount of $8,000. It's for video teleconferencing. So a fairly modest request this year.
Thank you. Members? Questions? Okay, Rep. Valdez, you're
thank
on
you very,
again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just out of curiosity, what are your attorneys' starting salaries?
We had, just in the past year, to remain competitive, we're trying to start them at $65,000.
Clarification? Thank you. You said you're trying to start, what is $65,000 their starting?
$65,000, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm through the chair. $65,000 is an average between the three regional offices. Obviously, cost of living in Tallahassee is a little different than in Tampa and Fort Lauderdale. So that's an average across the board.
Great. Follow-up question?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. In your CCRC South, what's the $50,000 additional rate for?
Mr. Chair? Looking at our numbers and with the increases that we got last year, I have made strides in recruiting. I've been able to recruit lead attorney positions and several second chair positions, but because I am trying to remain competitive with other agencies, the salaries have gone up. I anticipate, and my goal is to hire at least double the amount of second chair attorneys that I have now, as well as investigators. Investigators are critical to the work that we do, and we've seen great turnover in that area as well. So I hope to double, if not triple, the amount of investigators that I currently have. And in order to provide them that competitive salary, I'm asking for additional rate.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Anyone else? Thank you, Ms. Keffer.
Thank you. Thank you for
having me. Thank you for what y'all do for our state. All right, members. For our first two meetings, we have now gotten through all of the presentations of our agencies and their legislative budget requests for fiscal year 24-25. I encourage you to review all the information provided in the last two meetings and provide us with any suggestions or input for potential budget recommendations. As always, if there are any issues or you have questions, I know we didn't probably get to everybody's question today, we'll help facilitate getting the answers for you and let you talk to the individuals if you didn't quite get around to watch. I had a couple of questions myself today. We'll continue to strive to provide the information that you may request. I look forward to our work this year as we continue the work of this subcommittee. Does anyone have any other business which should properly be presented? Seeing none, Representative Stark moves we rise. Without objection, we're adjourned. Thank y'all.